Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heavy Pod as Heavy Cast episode, I think like 237 or something like that. Why is anybody taking, I think the only reason that we're keeping count is just for the sake of like, wow, how much fucking time have we dumped into this garbage pit? I don't know.
You got to keep up with it. It's always important to see those milestones in the high 200s.
Got
to
keep creating that content, brother. Hi, by the way, as you can hear, Ryan is here. You were doing the thing fucking finally.
Hey, Noyan.
The thing being the long-awaited Keep of Kalesin deep dive that nobody actually asked for, but I forced it through anyway. I rigged the vote.
The people still voted for it. We can legitimize it that way. They did still vote. It may have been because of the Dragon Force line at the end, but I don't think so.
Yeah, so, I mean, on Patreon, we did put up a vote with, like, several other options. And, like, Dimmoborgir was one of the options. In Flames was one of the options. Blind Guardian was one of the options. And Keep of Kalesin was the other option. And I think I put something in parentheses, like, so far away or something along those lines. And after months and months of pleading, finally the patrons have let me have this one. So, yay. So,
I'm appreciative too.
We're gonna start this deep dive by, like, saying that the first two albums are just, like, whatever.
I have things to say about those albums, damn it. I mean, not a lot, but I still have things to say.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of things to say as well. But yeah, I guess, like, my history with Keep of Kalesin, since that's somehow the format that we've arrived in. I discovered Keep of Kalesin because they were doing Eurovision, so let's talk about Eurovision, I guess. for a lot of our American listeners, Eurovision is either something that is just like, they have no idea what it is, or like they're extremely confused as to why it seems to be such a big deal. And I agree. And also, for the people who do know about it, they might be confused as to why, like, Israel and Australia are in Eurovision. I don't fucking know, but anyway. right, so Eurovision is the song contest. It's a yearly song contest that has been going along since, like, I'm just looking it up, like the 50s, I think. 1956 is the annual song contest. Every country from the EU, except for some countries, but also some countries not in the EU, send representatives where they basically do a contest internal to the country. I mean, some countries just nominate, others do a contest, and then they send an artist, and then the artist goes and performs the song live, and people all across the EU, and also not in the EU, but also whatever. I'm not going to get into the complicated politics of Eurovision, but they vote, and then one artist wins, and that's it. And it's a huge deal. It's, you know, because it's like both, you get some, like, bangers out of it every year, but also you get all this, like, country rivalries going, right? You get the European political and all that other stuff flowing, those juices flowing. So it's always a fun time. It's always a big deal. And if you want to learn more about it, there's a movie that Will Ferrell made that's a very accurate and realistic documentary called, what was it called? Eurovision, I believe. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah, I have not. I know it's on Netflix, but yes. I haven't seen it. But I think it is just called, like, Eurovision something.
It's Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. It's another one of those, like, Will Ferrell competition movies. Like, what was it called? Fucking Talladega Nights.
Blades of Glory.
Yeah, Talladega Nights, that glory thing. You know, he has a few of these things. The fucking Grab Life by the Balls. What's it called? The fucking dodgeball movie.
Oh my God. That is Dodgeball. Grab Life, but that's Vince Vaughn.
But is Will Ferrell not in that one?
I don't think he is.
I feel like he has.
Hold on.
There's Talladega Nights, the ballad of Ricky Bobby. He has to have, like, at least a cameo in this movie. Come on. How is he not in this movie? Is, like, everybody what Will Ferrell is in Dodgeball? A true underdog story.
He's not in Dodgeball. He is in Semi-Pro.
Semi-Pro. Yeah, that's also another one. But anyway, it's one of those movies. It's actually decent. Like, it has a lot of cameos, both from, like, real musicians, like, actual Eurovision. Okay, so Alexander Rybak is in the Eurovision movie. And Alexander Rybak performed with Keep of Kolesin. So this is the real deal. Anyway, why the fuck are we talking about Eurovision? Because in let me look up the year. That's how I found out about Keep of Kolesin. Because in 2010, they were finalists for Norway's Eurovision competition. Like I said, some countries just nominate the artists. Some countries are an internal competition. And Keep of Kolesin somehow were finalists in the year 2010. This was because in 2009, what the fuck did I say? 2009, Lordi won the Eurovision contest, and they were like, "Oh, metal!" And then like in 2006, I'm wrong. I got all these fucking whatever. But like for a few years after that, all the countries were like, yeah, we're going to submit metal bands to Eurovision. So, like, you know, Keep of Kolesin made a decent way up the ranks. And they performed the Dragon Tower in their, like, internal contest and the final round. And they ended up third place and didn't make it to Eurovision. But that's how I found out about them. And I was like, yeah, this is, like, a pretty banging, like, power metal song. I'll check this band out. And then I dug deeper and I was like, holy shit, like, what is going on here? And that's how I discovered Keep of Kolesin. And then we'll go through the rest. But I will say, if you do want to understand Eurovision, watch the Eurovision movie. It's an okay comedy movie. You know, it has a stacked cast with like real Will Ferrell, Rachel McAdams, Pierce Brosnan, Demi Lovato, and a bunch of other like random people. A bunch of actual Eurovision contestants, including as Alexander Rybak, which we're going to talk about more later. But yeah.
Okay. Well, I think they should have gotten Obsidian Claw. I think it's kind of bullshit they didn't get the, you know, main guy, but whatever.
So how did you come to know Keep of Kolesin?
I came to know Keep of Kolesin, I believe, through you. Just through, like, whenever Heavy Blog, like, I started out with you guys. I remember you talking about them at one point. I've seen the album cover for Reptilian and Epistemology multiple times.
Yep.
And I honestly, I said this to you, but because I've only ever been to their Bandcamp page, I thought, like, Reptilian was their first album. Did not realize they had, like, five before it.
That's everybody, though. I mean, that was the first album that I really listened to as well. So that makes sense. And I mean, you know,
Go ahead. I was going to say, if I came in and like the first song I heard was the Dragon Tower, honestly, I would be pretty hyped to like hear whatever was going on. And I would be pleasantly surprised when I heard the like heavier stuff towards the front.
Yeah, I mean, the band has like, they're kind of an underground band. You know, they're a small band. They're more like a project almost in some ways. And they're a band that never really made it. And they've tried many times and they've gotten like really close many times. But I feel like they've always not gotten the attention that I think they deserve. Which is why I've been really wanting to do this deep dive to kind of, you know, show the love a little bit and expose the band to like a broader audience, I guess.
They deserve it too because they make really fucking good music, and not only that, it's very technically sound as well.
Yeah, well, at least after the first couple of albums. all right, so let's dive in with so they put out a single in '95, but like I don't think anybody can find that. So let's talk about the debut album, Through Times of War. I really like the artwork for this album. It's like really kind of generic, but also kind of cool. Like, it sets a tone. It's better than like at least half of their other album artworks, and it's pretty generic black metal, but like in a way that kind of stands out, and that kind of you know can also be used to describe the rest of the like album and the sound as well. So I mean, this album is kind of black metal. I mean, you know, 97, let's see what metal albums were there out there in 97 to kind of compare. And Throne Darkness Triumphant, which is, you know, Dimmu's big kind of statement album. And like Emperor's Anthems to the Welkin Dust. So like, Welkin at Dusk, what the fuck? So like, you know, there were big boys in the black metal scene at that point. And like, this doesn't stand up. Oh, Arcturus is La Masquerade Infernal, Natnus Madrigal by Ulver, Enslaved. I feel like Enslaved had an album this year.
They probably did.
Let me double check. But yeah, I mean, basically they had Eld. Like, fucking Eld was out this year. And we talked about how awesome Eld was. Like, and it was just kind of like,
yeah.
Like, so Through Times of War doesn't really stand out compared to those. It's a decent black metal album. But yeah, I mean, there's two songs in it that I think stand out. One of them is Skygger of Sorg, which was the track that they had on the single beforehand. And that kind of hints at some of the kind of more interesting things they would be doing later down the line, with the kind of tonality that's not typical black metal, but kind of the, I don't know, Keep of Kalesin have this like spooky, upbeat, weird sound. Like, think of the intro of the first track to Reptilian. Like, that kind of sound that this song hints at. And then there's Obliterator, which is kind of a more, you know, has some of the thrashier elements that they end up doing later. And in fact, you know, this song they redo in a later EP. So they know, I guess. But yeah, I mean, this is okay. And I don't have much to say about this album other than it's cool. It has a 14-minute track, Nectarous Red Itch, which is okay. But yeah, I would say that this isn't what people come to Keep of Kalesin for. It's an okay album, but it's meh. What do you think?
So, for me, there was one thing that I kind of immediately noticed, which was the drums are insanely fucking loud.
Yes. Which is, I guess,
like, to the point... Oh, go ahead.
I guess it's not something that typically done in black metal at that time. But anyway, go ahead.
But I was, like, so I can understand where they're kind of coming from. Like, it feels like... It's almost like they're trying to, like, surround you with it, but it... Yeah, but it's just hammering. It's like your head is being slammed against a wall.
Yep.
It starts to interfere with the other elements of the music a little bit too much, too frequently.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, it's your average black metal production, I guess. It's not terrible. Like, that's not fair. Like, it's for, you know, 97 black metal. It's decent production. Like, it's not.
Yeah, it's
not like one of those things where it's like, are you taking the piss, mate? Like, but yeah.
Yeah, like, it's not like an embarrassing thing. It's not like something where I'd be like, oh, that's bad. It is something where I can tell they want to do something on like a later album, but this is like their first attempt at doing it, and so it just doesn't. It's not there yet.
Yeah.
Like that, the drum sound to me like is. I mean, honestly, it's like one of the least important parts of the soul album because I got through it like just fine. It's not a big deal, but it was the first thing I noticed. Let me see. Oh, I actually really liked the closing song. I liked Nectarous Red and Itch.
Yeah. This is...
Because I just thought it was a bit more adventurous, I guess. And in listening to the other songs, my main complaint was it's not a bad first album, but it like feels like it falls victim to becoming like a wash of sound. Like a lot of it blends.
Yeah, like it's just kind of... There's a lot of stuff that's just like blast beats and trem picking in like some minor key, and like nothing really kind of stands out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I mean, that's pretty much, and I also like the art too. I think like the purples and reds on the it's like a castle, I think, or something.
Yeah, and like the moon in the back. I think it's a striking image. It's cool, but like
it is.
Eh. Okay.
But not for this album.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. Then, by the way, for the first couple of albums, the band has a consistent lineup. But then, you know, we, after a while, it becomes clear that, like, this is Obsidian Claw's, like, thing. Like, this band, he's the kind of driving force behind the band. Arndt Grønbæk is his real name. And, you know, he's the guitar player and the, like, main composer. And, yeah, like, you'll see that throughout the years, he's the, you know, he's the constant, he's the driving force. But anyway, second album, Agnen, A Journey Through the Dark. So the artwork for this album is terrible. This is really bad. Like, I don't even know what they're going for here. There's like this mantis, like, mm-hmm. alien creature with like a swirl in the back, and it's just like the contrast is really low, and it's just like, okay, bro. Like, the first album cover was probably like they just like stole a bunch of stock art and then like photoshopped them together. This one is like, mm-hmm. yeah, they should have probably done that again.
Yeah, I think that probably would have benefited in this case. But I will say, I do think that the music is a lot better on this album, to me.
Yeah, it stands out a lot more. Like, if you look at, even, like, straight out of the gate, Dragonlord, you can see the kind of salt of the Keep of Kalesin song sound starting to be applied here. With, like, the production is much more sharp. Like, previously it was just kind of more in the black metal realm. Now it's like really kind of, they have this biting guitar tone that they're going for, and that there's the kind of signature style of Obsidian Claw starting to come through with, like, he does this thing with like fast trempicked chords, not as like your typical black metal da 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 da, like trempicked single notes, but like dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum, like kind of really spamming the chords and like palm muting them, which is like a kind of distinct thing. Like, it's like if you were to play like thrash style, but black metal riffs, but like twice the speed. And that's kind of his thing. And you kind of start to see that in here. And it's just like, that's kind of the sound that, you know, comes to define the band. And straight out of the gate, in Dragon Lord, they kind of establish that. And then I say straight out of the gate, but I think there's like a few different versions of this album with like the track order kind of being all over the place. I think there's the first edition, Pain Humanized, was the first track. But in the second edition, which is like the intended version, Dragonlord is the not the first track either. Dryland is the first track. But I don't fucking know. It's a mess. Anyway, but Dragonlord, I think in the streaming service version of the album, I think it's Dragonlord being the first track really stands and, you know, establishes the tone. And then they go into those things where, like, Keep of Kalesin have this kind of stylistic thing of, like, they do the fast, spammed, palm-muted chords and then break off into, like, a blast beat plus trem-picking section. That's kind of like a, you know, build-up-release kind of thing. And you kind of start to see that being established here. I don't think it comes to the point of a cohesive, unique sound, but they are kind of starting to establish the technique, I think.
Yeah, I'd say this mostly comes through in personality. Like, it comes through in that it's showing that the band is got something else to say besides just, like, what all the other black metal bands were saying at the time, or at least what it looked like.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to say, my version of the album has Pain Humanized as the first track.
There you go.
And Dragonlord is number 6.
Yeah, there's like 3-4 different versions of this, and it's like all over the place. I don't know, dude.
I mean, Dragonlord is really cool. I liked how it out opened with the waves. I think those are waves.
Mm. Yeah.
And like just as it goes, the guitar just gets better and better. Obsidian Claw just starts going harder and harder.
Yeah. And I think that's the kind of, you know, the reason that this album kind of carries is just because the guitar work is just like trying so hard. Like, it's still within the framework of the first album, but it's like, it's a dude that is just like trying to max out in terms of technique. But he's still limited by the framework of kind of the black metal sound, which he's going to break out of in the next album. I would say that, you know, in 99, you know, again, Spiritual Black Dimensions by Dimmu, Emperor's Nine, Dark Tranquility's Projector. Wow. Like, I don't think this album stands out in 1999. Like, it's a decent album, but again, like, the no.
But if you put this up to, like, Projector, like, it doesn't stand a fucking chance.
But even to its peers of, like, Dimmuborgir, I feel like, is the closest comparison you can make to Keep Up Klassen. Mm-hmm. Not that it's particularly close. Or Enslaved. Like, I feel like Keep is, like, somewhere between Dimmu and Enslaved. And, like, it doesn't stand compared to either of those bands, what they were doing at the time. And, it, like, I feel like, technique-wise, they're doing something that neither band is doing. But they just haven't kind of honed in on the songwriting yet. And it's kind of odd that I pushed so hard to do a deep dive into an album, into a band, who I like think the first two albums are pretty meh. But then we're gonna kind of really start unlocking stuff.
Yeah. But also, like, yeah, I mean, I think with any of these, like, so many of them, they just have, like, to find their footing, and then they'll find it with, like, then one or two albums.
Yep.
And it just, you gotta get through it. Sometimes you gotta cringe a little bit to be good.
Yep. And boy, in 2003 we got Reclaim. So you may not know this, but the big deal about Reclaim is that they got Attila from Mayhem to do the vocals on this EP. That's super cool. So basically there was, and I think they kept trying to do more and more stuff with Attila, but it just, you know, they always ran into, like, scheduling conflicts and you know, just like things never kind of panned out because I know that Obsidian was also trying to do a like live show with Attila doing some of the vocals, but anyway, so they redid Obliterator from the first album. Like I said, they recognized that that was like one song that stood out, and I think it's like much cooler with like the new production and like Attila on the vocals, because Attila is just kind of like a, you know, he's one of the most unique vocalists in the black metal scene, I think. And for good reason, right? He's like in fucking Mayhem. But yeah, so I think there's also, there's like, you know, on this EP, the first song is it's just an intro. Nine is okay. But I think Come Damnation is the first real Keep of Klassen song. That's where you really hear the kind of sound that we kind of come to know and love in the albums that come afterwards. And it's a cool song, and it has Attila on the vocals, which is like a really cool thing. And I think it's the of stuff before Armada, it's the song that they play the most live. And it kind of, you know, it makes sense because it's like a legit Keep of Klassen song with like the even faster, like the BPM is like quite high, there's a lot of blast beating, and like Obsidian Clouds really started to kind of hone in on the, okay, I gotta like play these chords really fast, like just really fast chord spam, and like taking that into like the higher registers and kind of basically not just spamming one chord but also like creating a melody by, you know, just doing really fast sequence of chords, that kind of becomes the Keep of Klassen trademark. And this is the first song where it really happens.
I also think that I mean, some of the last album had it, but this is like where I'm really starting to notice that the like the synths and like the guitars are coming together alongside each other more often.
Yeah, but the one thing that they do is like a lot of the black metal from that era, when they go into like synths and clean guitars, they kind of just like go into like full on ambient black metal, like they just like really reduce the energy. Whereas with like Keep of Klassen, it still like kind of keeps an upbeat energy going. It's like a kind of high energy synth clean guitar section that really kind of builds the energy. And like again in Come Damnation, there's this middle section where like you know the guitars drop. Like at first you have the synths and then the like, and that's like a really kind of trademark Keep of Klassen thing of like the guitar building up with this pulse of like and then like the bass and drums start coming in and like then it just like goes full blast mode. And I think that's like the, you know, they do it in Armada, they do it in Colossus, they do it on every album going forward, like this kind of trademark stylistic thing. And this is like where it's like really okay, we got it. This is the formula.
I mean, and what better place to discover it than on this EP when you have like this like legendary vocalist with you?
Yeah.
And you also have Frost from Satyricon.
Oh.
Or Satyricon?
I never know how to pronounce that fucking band's name.
But yeah, he's on drums, I think.
Oh yeah, you're right. So this is like it's just Obsidian, Attila and Frost. So it's like almost like a super group, except Obsidian is like the like the small guy next to these two giants. And
yeah. I think he also he wanted to work with him more and more, but like he has ended up running into scheduling conflicts, and because all of the like members were in like bigger bands or whatever,
yep,
just didn't happen.
Yeah, but like this is I feel like where I don't know how the fuck he made this happen, but it's really cool that he did, and this is where he kind of levels up. And afterwards, if you look at the lineup of the band, there was like a, after Agnin in 2000, there was just like a break, like the band was on hiatus or something. And with this EP, kind of, he came back and then he got a bunch of new members. I think Robin Isaacson or Wizziak, the bass player, is the only other person who stayed with Obsidian throughout the years. Like he's the only other constant member, but he got the drummer, that he got until introspection. So like, basically, he kind of established the lineup, and then he started searching for a vocalist. And he got Thebon, which was basically the band's vocalist up until Introspection, which the story there is fucking hilarious, and we'll get to that. But like, basically, you got the core Keep of Klesson lineup at this point. It was Thebon, Obsidian, Wizziak, and what's the drummer's name? I forget. Warrock. Yeah, anyway. It's dumb black metal names. But anyway, you got the lineup. We're good to go. All right. So then, do you have anything else to say about Reclaim?
I do think that it's really cool that like this like release exists where I'm fairly certain that when I was reading about this, I try to do too much research so I can like get some surprises. But like that, I think when Frost heard the songs, like the new Keep of Klesson material, like he insisted on playing on it, like he wanted to play on it.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean it's really cool material, and
yeah.
All right.
And also I wanted to mention really quick. There's two live tracks.
Yes.
On the end of this thing, and on Reclaim. When he says, "Come on, you motherfuckers!" I love it. I love live banter so much because you get to have those moments where it just almost takes you completely out of it. But it also makes you go harder sometimes. Like, I feel like if I heard, like, a little bit further ahead, if I heard Dragon Tower live, I would lose my mind. I feel like that'd be a very fun song to hear live.
Oh, yes. I've seen them live once, and I'll talk about it. That was an amazing experience. Speaking of live, by the way, complete digression. Yesterday I watched the Contortionist live show, the Exoplanet 10-year anniversary thing. It was so fucking good, dude. Like,
yeah.
Michael Lessard is great for that sound, and like they sound so good playing that live. It just like, it's amazing. With one exception, they played like three songs from Intrinsic instead of two songs from Exoplanet, and every time they played the Intrinsic songs, it was like just like such a drop in quality of the songs and energy. It's just like nowhere near like the kind of cohesion and power, but like it was a really cool experience. I really enjoyed it, except for the Intrinsic songs, whatever. It's just like, it goes to show that with the lineup that they have today and the sound they have today, how awesome they could be if they made like Exoplanet style songs, and they just don't, and it's just a huge fucking bummer. But like the live energy, like Michael Lessard, the way he does those vocals live, he just brings like a completely different energy than like the previous guy. Like he has so much more variety in his voice, and they sound fucking amazing. And I just wanted to say,
yeah, I mean, Michael Lessard's a killer vocalist. He does those pterodactyl screams that are fucking really sick.
Yep.
But yeah, they are just like, hey, we're gonna do like kind of like more prog stuff or like prog rock or whatever.
Just like new age.
Oh, sorry, they matured. My bad. Ugh.
All right.
Just like what?
Speaking of maturity, Now we have Armada, and Armada is where the song of Sound of Keepakalesson really matured. Came out in 2006. This album took them like 9 months to record.
Jeez.
There is a few tidbits about this album. When they were recording to like doing the pre-production, the drummer, I think. Let me double check this. They were like, yes, the drummer. He showed up so drunk and hungover that like they couldn't do it. So they just like half-assed it, and like the pre-pro tracks for the album were like garbage. He just couldn't blast or like double bass. They're like, yeah, okay, we'll just like, you know, skip the pre-pro and like do it all in the recording. And you know, it took like 8 more months to do it, and it was just like a nightmare. The studio that they recorded the album went bankrupt right after them. They finished recording it, and like the Obsidian was like, you know, he wanted the album to be like really epic, and like he was inspired by the movie Alexander and also Chronicles of Riddick. The title is actually a quote from Riddick. Get my armada off the ground. There's a voice sample for that, from that, which is a quote from the movie Chronicles of Riddick. Anyway, so he wrote like Crown of Kings, Wealth of Darkness, and Black Uncharted, and he was like, these are awesome, and like I need to write one more song that's like on this level of epicness. And he just couldn't. But then he just like, I don't know, sat down and wrote within. Overnight, like throughout a night, he did an all-nighter and wrote the title track Armada, and it was like, okay, now we got it. And then, you know, they went and recorded it, and that's that. And finally, when they started to record the album, they actually didn't have a vocalist. They just like recorded the whole album, and then they actually like recorded vocals with him, but like Obsidian was like very unhappy with the vocals, and was like, man, maybe we should just release it instrumentally. And I feel like the vocals are just fucking up the atmosphere. And then they kept doing it again and again and again. And then they finally, like, they kind of were happy with the vocals. They tried like a bunch of different styles, and then they finally arrived at, you know, what they did for the album. Yeah, this was like a really challenging album for them to release, and like, they had like the label that they were with, like the label manager changed like 3 times, like the marketing just wasn't working out, like it was just like all over the place. And he was also touring with Satyricon at the time, and like they were also opening for Satyricon, and like Keep of Kalesson doesn't do corpse paint, so he would like play Keep material, run backstage, put on corpse paint, change the shirt, and then play Satyricon. It's just like this is like extremely hectic period of their life. But they put out a fucking incredible album. Like Armada is like the first great album that they put out, and like for 2006, let's see what's the competition. I like to do this for this series for some reason.
It's fun.
Blood Mountain, Come Clarity, Sacrament, Enslaved's Rune. I would say that Armada is better than Enslaved's Rune.
You can't see it, but I'm soy facing.
Rune is a great album, but like Rune is an album that is like what came before and after. You know, we talked about it in Enslaved Deep Dive. Like there's like this series of albums in that period where it's like they're like kind of making incremental changes to their sound, and it's a good sound. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Armada is just like this like crazy thing, and like there's nothing else like Armada out there. Even like subsequent Keep albums don't really sound like Armada in some ways, where Armada is like their fastest album. It's ridiculous. Like there's that YouTube video I sent you of like Obsidian playing the Crown of Kings, and it's just like fucking insane. Mm-hmm. What the fuck is this guy doing with his picking hand? In fact, with Vengeance Rising, it's 185 BPM, but they're like playing 16th note triplets, so like the BPM is like over 1,000 if you like count it in like that. It's just like so fucking ridiculously fast. And like, that's no wonder they had a hard time recording the album, because it's just like really challenging material. And it's like interesting. Yeah. It's really progressive. It's really fast. And it has like all the hallmarks of Keep of Kolesin. I mean, we talked about the like fast power chord and fast chord melody thing. Obsidian mm-hmm. adds this new technique that I feel like he's one of the few people who does this, where he will take a chord and he will like trim pick parts of the chord, but he'll trim pick different parts of the chord to create a melody. This is, you can hear this in Crown of Kings, I think the verse riff. Yes, so like right after the fast riff, and when the like a 30 seconds in where you begin, where like the riff comes in, he does this thing where like na 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 na. What he's doing is like he is playing like few chords, but he's playing different parts of the chord to emphasize different notes in the chord, to make it sound like he's playing a trumpet melody over like a single chord. And it's like a really unique sound that's like really hard to do, because like you have to play with so much power and so much control to like trumpet different parts of the chord. And it's just this like ridiculous technique that is also applied in a really creative way. Anyway, I'm going to stop nerding out for a second and let you talk.
No, I love this shit. Love it so much. I think I didn't know he was inspired by like Alexander and Chronicles of Riddick. I did specifically notice the like voice clip. I didn't know where it was from.
Yeah, it's from Riddick.
Is that Vin saying that? Is that our boy Vin saying it?
I'm not sure where the quote is, like what the quote actually is, but I know that it's from there. Let me try to look it up.
It is from that movie. But anyway, like this definitely feels like it is an album that is inspired by like relentless marching on of like the machine of war.
Yes,
it never fucking stops,
and it's like still
go ahead, sorry.
Really varied and like really interesting, progressive, aggressive. Not easy to do all of those things at the same time and like not be overwhelming. But the songwriting is just like has so much momentum. Anyway, sorry, keep going.
No, you're right. I mean, it does have so much momentum. It carries itself, I mean, so well throughout the whole album. I don't like, I'm not thinking about like what track I'm on, like what's going on. Like it is just one track after another. And I'm like, this is all hitting in the exact right spot.
Yeah. And like the,
and I, oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. I'll let you finish your thoughts before intervening. Go.
I was just going to say, I mean, I noticed that on Vengeance Rising, the picking speed, I immediately was, like, picking up on just how fast it felt. Because, like, it was making me go, like, God, it makes, like, something like Metallica would do or whatever, like, down picking. It made my hand hurt. It made just thinking about it.
Yep. The thing is, though, they also bury, like, really cool melodies on top of that fast stuff that they're doing. Like, this is an album that doesn't let up in any aspect. Like, there's so many memorable hooks in this album while still having all these, like, crazy fast bits. And, like, it's ridiculous. Like, it's such an overpowered album, I feel like.
It is. I mean, I think that this one is definitely the one where, like, if I heard it in 2006, I'd probably be like, yeah, this is one of, like, the best albums I've heard in the year.
Yeah, it's like,
because it kicks ass now, so.
Yeah, it still completely holds up. The production is perfectly fine. Like, it's like a kind of aggressive production. It's kind of, it's really thrashy, actually. And, like, in general, I feel like this album is their thrashiest album. And it's like, it's literally just if you take thrash and power metal and play it at like four times the speed. That's basically what this album is. Yeah, it's an incredible album. Like the songs, they played live from, it's their third most played live album. And they play Crown of Kings the most, obviously. That's kind of the, you know, marquee track. I don't think they've ever played Vengeance Rising because I think it's just too tough to play.
Honestly, I don't blame them.
They play Wealth of Darkness. They play Winged Watcher, and a few times, many are we. Winged Watcher is kind of a bit slower track, which is like still pretty fast. And Wealth of Darkness. Which one was Wealth of Darkness? Oh, this one. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I feel like when you have Armada, Crown of Kings, Vengeance Rising, Wealth of Darkness is okay because like the end of that has the really cool da-na-na kind of weird slidey guitar thing that they do. It's just really epic.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that would translate well live, but I feel like you got to play Armada, man. You got to play Vengeance Rising. Like, I don't know. It's just so many bangers on this album that it's hard for me to pick, I guess.
It is, and they're all bangers. No doubt.
Anything else that you want to say about Armada? I mean, it's just fast, to the point, precise, fucking awesome, no nonsense, great album.
Yeah. It just keeps getting better.
And that's it? Nothing else from you? All right. Fine.
Yep, that's it. That's it. Everything.
Then we get, a few years later, in 2008, we get Colossus, a.k.a. Oblivion. The artwork for this is literally just Oblivion, the box art, and he even acknowledges that he was influenced by it, and by the movie Alexander again. The poster for the movie Alexander, I mean. He really likes that mm-hmm. movie, I think. So, for this album, again, some trivia. They felt that, like, I mean, the studio went bankrupt, so they kind of put together a studio themselves. But that meant that, like, you know, they used a lot of the money for the equipment, and they didn't have enough money and time for the production. And they feel that Obsidian feels that the production is a little bit lacking. They had to kind of keep pushing back this album again and again because they were, like, running late because of all these, like, things. So it's like, you know, this is an album where he feels, I think, that, you know, they didn't make it as good as they could be. But I think that is still really cool. The middle part of the title track was inspired by the Xerxes tent trip scene in 300. Like, you know, where they have this, like, fortune tellers, and there's this kind of, you know, Xerxes has this, like, prophecy or whatever. And there's, like, this whole vibe in that movie. And basically that was kind of what he was going for with that song. He really likes his, like, mm-hmm. historical action movies, I guess. Anyway, the cool thing about this album is, like, they kind of take the Armada formula and they kind of slow it down a little bit and focus a lot more on the melody and theming. You know, this album has this riff that goes that they keep repeating this theme. Like, several of the songs have, like, a different play on this theme. You know, the intro starts with that, and then the first song, like, they go into a lot more kind of groove and melody in this album, and while still kind of holding up some of the fast black metal progressive kind of style. But I think this is where they mm-hmm. realize that, you know, Armada, like, we did that, and it's just like they can't push further in that direction. They literally just, like, physically cannot do more in there, and anything that they kind of try to do within that same style would just be inferior. So instead, they kind of expand the sound a little bit. They bring in more synths. They bring a lot more kind of melody and groove and ballads and themes to the album. And I think it works really well. I think the thing with Keep Up Colossus for me is that you really listen to it as an album. Like, I mean, the songs stand alone as well, but to get the full value out of it, you got to listen to the album as a whole to kind of get the themes and get the kind of ups and downs. And mm-hmm. I think Colossus songs especially don't stand out well on their own, but if you sit down and listen to the whole album, it's awesome. And you know, Ascendant is the one song I feel that stands the most on its own, and that's the one song that they apply live the most. So, yeah, I mean, Colossus, I feel a lot of people really love that album. And I mean, when I say a lot of people, a lot of Keep of Colossus fans, so that's not a lot of people. But to me, Armada and Reptilian are just better, like, at different aspects of it. And Colossus is transitionary. So while it's amazing, I feel like it's harder to recommend than either of those. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I do too. So there is something about this album that is, like, very polished and clean, though. Like, it is interesting to hear them say that they didn't have enough money for the production, because it sounds, like, very, like, very clear, and, I mean, it sounds like it's meant to be what it's meant to be. Like, I mean, I could see room for improvement, I guess, but, like, I just wasn't even, I didn't even think there would be a shortage of funds for that. Yeah, it seems like go ahead.
No, you just finish your thought.
Just like hearing like the acoustic guitar and everything. I mean, it rings really clear. Like, you hear every instrument and sounds like it has its place. And I kind of associate that more with, like, the very, like, detailed, like, top level production. So to hear that is very interesting to me.
I feel like maybe what they wanted to do was, like, if you listen to, like, Ascendant, for example, when it's, like, kicking off the blasts and all that stuff, like, everything is, like, sitting on its own, and you can kind of hear each of them individually, but maybe they wanted them to kind of really kind of culminate together in, like, this big wall of sound, and they couldn't get that to happen. And I can kind of see that if that's what they were going for. Like, the guitars are kind of thin, and them being thin, in my opinion, works here, because, like, it kind of leaves room for other things. But I could imagine a version of this album where it's, like, much more wall of sound, and that could work as well. So maybe that's what they wanted to accomplish.
Honestly, I mean, an Ascendant is such, like, a good ending track that, like, if they made a whole album like that, obviously I would never complain.
I mean, that shit rules. Reptilian is basically that, I feel like. Like, Reptilian is...
It is.
Basically, they're, like, continuing from where Ascendant left off. And I feel like the Colossus is, like, a precursor to Reptilian. And it's, like, if you... I feel like... And I think this is unfair to Colossus, because this album is really fucking good. It's, like... So, you know, you got New Empire's Birth. You got Colossus and Ascendant. I think those are, like, the standout tracks. And they really do the kind of theming buildup of the... You know, that one riff that I mentioned that is just keeps popping up throughout this album. But I think the other songs, they're good too. But they're, like... They are bridge the gaps between the, you know, more standout tracks, I think. Like, there is not as much memorability to them compared to the, like, the best tracks on the album. And I feel like the sound of this album, I feel like it's just building up to Ascendant at the end because of all the theming and whatnot. And then with Reptilian basically kind of taking what works about Ascendant and then just, like, doubling down on all of that, I feel like it kind of diminishes this album a little bit in comparison. Before Reptilian came out, I think this album is fucking awesome. After Armada, it kind of shows the kind of direction that they want to go. But I feel like it's, again, it's just sandwiched in between two, like, 10 out of 10 albums. So it's being like an 8.5 out of 10, just kind of, you know. I feel like if this was an EP...
It gets lost by
If this was an EP with just those, like, three songs that I mentioned, I think it would be, like, a fantastic EP. And the rest of the songs are fine. They don't hurt. But it's just, like, I don't know.
No, I get it. I mean, especially, like you're saying, when it's sandwiched in between two albums that are, like you said, 10 out of 10s, it's very easy to just be like, well... This one is good, and it's like, I really like it, but it also definitely does not stand up to these.
Yep. All right. Then we have 2010's Reptilian, and this is my second favorite album of all time after Trivium Shogun. So this is, you know, I fucking love this album. This album is amazing. So, you know, after the Dragon Tower made the Eurovision circuit, they, you know, put out the whole ass album, and the whole album is about dragons. It's a cool concept album about, like, dragon stuff. It's basically like, dragons are awesome, and, like, right out of the gate you start with Dragon Iconography. Like, This is the only album that they did after the first two like full Black Metal albums that doesn't have an intro track. It just starts. And I think that works, you know, really strongly in its favor because like
it does.
It's just this album, I sit down and listen to this album and I just like lose track of myself. It just flows together so naturally. Each song has such a unique thing that's going on with it, like, but they all just kind of combine together so well. This is like their most progressive album because it has like, it plays with like rhythm, it plays with like, you know, time signatures, it plays with adding a lot more kind of progressive stuff, and it's just so cool. Like every song on this album to me, like, I mean, obviously it's one of my favorite albums, so I'm biased, but like every song here is just like amazing, incredible song to me. Like with, and like you have the variety, right? You have the more aggressive songs, you have the kind of Armada style, you know, the fast stuff, you have basically Ascendant style, kind of this journey of a song, you have the Divine Land, which is just like constantly epic, just like all huge wall of sound kind of sound. There's just everything in this album, and it's just like so fucking amazing. Like I love this album so much that I don't know how to describe it. But every song has like a unique hook, a unique thing that it's going for, and a place within the album. And they're just so amazing. I don't know, dude. You take it away a little bit.
I think that I think you're 100% right. Reptilian is a fucking shredder. I like to just start with the intro because it does just start out. You get Dragon Iconography and then start from there and just keep going and going. I was listening to it before we got on the call. And like I got to like Dark as Moonless Night, and it's, God, I just like all the way. I wanted to keep listening to the fucking album. And you're right, you do lose yourself when you listen to it.
Yeah, and like
very easily.
Dark as Moonless Night is like a good kind of the slower, old school black metal kind of groovy thing that is just perfectly placed within the album, because like there's just so many songs that are just like all in your face energy, and then this is kind of like a really slow moody interlude that kind of carries the same energy of the other songs with the kind of very Keep of Kolesin style riffing, and then just the two-step 1-2 kind of slow vibe that then just like really gives you some breathing room. And like that's, I think, you know, the one of the reasons that you get to have Divine Land after this one, which is just like one of the most over the top song on the album, and if like it's the seventh song on the album, and it would just kind of, you would die like if you just, it was, the album was like constantly high energy. So Dark as Moonless like really kind of serves to kind of pull it back a little bit to then just kind of go all in with Divine Land.
If I would have gone on believing that this was like their first album, I would have been like, holy shit, wow, what a debut. But no, it's, yep. this is such a fucking good album. And I've seen the album cover a lot. Like, the album cover is a very distinct album cover. The drawing of the dragon is, the painting of the dragon is very nice.
Yep. It's just like, really, you know, here's a dragon. There you go, man. This is it.
Yeah. And it's a no-nonsense dragon. I will say, Obsidian Claw is treading on some thin ice when he's making his next album about dragons, and he just ripped off Oblivion. I mean, it's kind of
It is a year before Skyrim, though.
Yeah, I read that interview where he's like, yeah, I know what's coming out, I'm gonna play it all Christmas.
He's such a fucking nerd.
I loved that interview, it was so cute.
In 2011, they played Divine Land live with Alexander Rybak, who won Eurovision in 2009, and he was in the Eurovision movie. That's the callback. They did a live version of Divine Land with him, and it's fucking awesome. He sings a little bit, but also, like, he has this ballin' violin, you know, bit that is, like, very present throughout the song. I don't know how that made that, how they made that happen, but it's a fucking awesome version of the song. It's available on YouTube with, like, potato quality, but it's really cool because, like, Alexander's also, like, fucking circle headbanging while playing violin with them as the band is just, like, ripping it as well. And he's also doing the, you know, the epic chorus where they're just yelling the da, 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 that bit. Like, he's also singing with them. It's just the fucking cool ass thing. And then there's, like, you know, they do, like, trade offs with Obsidian Claw side by side. It's just like, how the fuck did this happen? I don't know. But, like, we got a Eurovision winner to perform a fucking 6 minute black metal progressive song with blast beats, circle headbang on stage. I don't know. Norway is awesome, dude.
Yeah, it is. I think that is also really cool. Just the idea that, like, the Keep of Kolesin could be entered into Eurovision and placed, like, you know, third or whatever in there. Was it just because the from where they were, like, they placed third?
So they were the finalists to represent Norway, but they ended up placing third and somebody else went. I feel like Dragon Tower would have had play at Eurovision. I feel like the song that they picked... ended up picking was, you know, worse than Dragon Tower, but maybe I'm biased.
I mean, but Dragon Tower, like, by the end of that song, I've got my lighter out, I'm ready to, like, rock this shit. Fucking rules. I would not have even bet against Dragon Tower as like taking it all. That is a good song.
Yeah, and the song that they end up going with is just dog shit. It's like, let me find it for you. It's just like a Disney style pop ballad. It sucks ass so much. And Dragon Tower would have fucking killed it. Anyway, so the interesting thing about Dragon Tower, and this is the segue into the next thing. But before we go into the next, okay, sorry. There's so much stuff happening now. The interesting, I'll leave the Dragon Tower thing to after this. So this is a news story that I did some investigative journalism for on the Heavy blog. And so basically in 2013, the band released the single Introspection. And notably, Theban was not on vocals. Obsidian Claw was on vocals, which we'll get to in a second. But the band released this statement as to why OC was the vocalist. We haven't heard from him, Theban, in 5 months. He went to South Africa with his girlfriend and we received no life sign or answers to our messages. Instead of waiting it out, we just had to move on, and I started testing the vocals in studio myself, realizing my vocals were far from bad. I've always been the driving force of the band, and I found it easier if I just managed to handle the vocals from now on instead of replacing the band with someone else. The worst part of this will be, of course, be to do both vocals and guitars live, but it's all a matter of practice, really. We now feel that this is the way to go, and the band is, in fact, stronger than ever. So, basically, the dude just disappeared in the jungle for, like, half a year. They couldn't reach him, and, like, they thought he was dead. And they were like, okay, yeah, let's just move on, I guess. And then, like, OC was like, yeah, you know, I'm just, like, playing all these insane-ass guitar parts that nobody else can play, but I'll do vocals as well. No big deal. And he does them live. It's awesome. And then, like, after they did this, a while later, Theban came back. And he said, I'm not missing in the jungle. I went to study and relax for 3 months and did not hear anything from the band in that time. I got a message about a band meeting a week ago, but I didn't reply because I was preoccupied with other projects, and I was deciding if I wanted to continue with KOK. Today, I read in a press release that they have recorded new music and even made a video and fired me in public at the Inferno Festival. Clearly, this proves that they have made their decision about me quite some time ago. This kind of loyalty and friendship is exactly one of the reasons I've been considering leaving the band for quite some time now. I wish them all the best. Like, okay. I understand that maybe the band moved along a bit fast, but, like, if the dude ghosts them for, like, half a fucking year, like, what are they supposed to do? Like, and, like, not only does the, like, even if the guy claims that he didn't receive any messages from them while in the jungle, which, like, I mean, he was in South Africa, like, disappeared, and, like, you know, the band doesn't know what the fuck happened to him, and they've been texting him for months, and they can't reach him. And then he comes back, and he just keeps ghosting them. So it's like, what is the band supposed to do? Like, how are they supposed to know he's alive? And, like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's odd.
So that... so he's... He didn't contact them for a while, but what he was saying was he was in South Africa for 3 months, so that 2 months, whatever, like the 5 months it took, he was just back home and didn't say shit.
He came back and it's like, I was considering leaving the band anyway, so I was just ghosting them, and then I'm upset that they fired me. It's like, bro, what? I don't know. I mean, it's just such a bizarre story, because for a while, we thought that he was just dead and gone, like, and then apparently he's alive and just, like, ghosting the band. Okay. I don't know.
That is absurd.
Yep. And they, you know, later, like last year, OC said that he wanted to do a crowdfunder to, like, you know, put together, like, a greatest hits album, like, re-record some songs with Thebon and Attila. It never happened, but I assume that that he was open to it means that, you know, there's no more bad blood between them. I don't know. But, you know, it was an odd, very odd situation. Yeah, that's the thing.
I'm glad I did not read about that myself. I'm glad I waited.
Yeah, that's extremely odd. So alongside Introspection, they released an EP with Introspection, Flight of the Dragon, or whatever that one is called. Basically,
Flight of the Hatchling. Okay,
Hatchling. Yeah. basically, OC's take on Flight of the Bumblebee, playing it like Keep of Kalesin style, which is a really cool idea, and the Dragon Tower Extreme version. So here's a little bit of story. I don't remember how I dug all of this info up, but I'm a bit of a Keep of Kalesin historian, so here's the real deal. There, while they were putting together Reptilian, before the Eurovision stuff happened, there's a version of Dragon Tower where it's, like, way faster and has blast beats. There's one live recording of it, and how it works is they play it like the, you know, slow version, right? The album version, the Eurovision version, and then after, like, the second chorus, they just, like, do a drum fill and then just go blast beat mode and play it again, but way faster. And I think that's it's not exactly the same thing, but I think it's a really cool idea to just kind of fake out with, like, a slow song and then just, like, do it again, like, really fast. I think that's just, like, a really clever way to handle that song. But after submitting to Eurovision and gaining fame, they cut that version out and they just kind of made like a power metal version that is just like, you know, no blast beat stuff, just like a really cheesy power metal solo, which is a really good solo, by the way. I love the solo in that song. It's so good. And then just kind of a crowd chant after the solo, and then the song kind of ends. But then what they were saying was, like, with the EP, okay, this is how this song is supposed to be. So let's, you know, bring back the original version of the song. But the EP version of the song is just blast beats all the way through. And I think it has a different solo. So it's not exactly the original version that they played live. It's like, because the original version is slow then fast. Album version is just slow. And EP version is just fast. I wish they did, like, the full, you know, original version. But I think what they did was they didn't re-record anything. The EP still has Thebon's vocals on it. So what I'm assuming they did is they just took the, you know, existing tracks and just redid the drums. And that's it. They just didn't want to spend too much time on it. But it would have been interesting if they, like, redid the whole song from scratch. Anyway, that's just...
Yes, it would have.
But that being said, Introspection is a really cool fucking song. And also, it was, like, their first good music video. And it's just, like, such a vibe. Like, this is like a new sound that we're hearing from Keep of Kalesin, where it's like kind of even more progressive, even more epic, and kind of the synths play a bigger role now. And Obsidian totally mm-hmm. kills it as a vocalist. Like, I feel like he's actually better than Thebo.
Yeah, he's a great vocalist. I mean, like, I did not, I don't, nothing against, is it Thevon or Devon?
Thebon. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but it's like Thebon. Thebon.
Thebon.
Torbjörn is his real name. Like the Overwatch character.
His name, oh, Torbjörn. Oh, that's great. Thank you, Torbjörn. No hate to him, no shade to Torbjörn, but he Obsidian Claw does a very good job on the vocals here. You don't even really miss him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's much way cooler to have a guitarist frontman. That's just, you know, a thing that I have. You know, I love bands that have a guitarist frontman.
Yeah, I know you have this big sign that's pointing to you that says I'm the guitarist frontman in the room, and I'm seeing it and I'm acknowledging it for you. So you have to say anything.
Hey, I have a Soulfly poster over here. I have a Machine Head poster over here. And Trivium is my favorite band. So, like, I love guitarist frontmen. Anyway.
Yeah, it's already out there.
With this song, I think, you know, the one thing that you could be concerned about is that now that OC is doing vocals, are they going to kind of slow down? Are they going to pare down their sound? I think that's a legitimate concern. So, mm-hmm. 3 years later, they put out Epistemology. And boy, Epistemology is another... Sorry, do you have any takes on the EP before we move on?
Actually, yes, I do. And they're very short. I literally have two notes I wanted to read. So right. I listened in Introspection, and I enjoyed it. And so that's not the note. The note is Flight of the Hatchling? Yeah, in case you thought we weren't extreme? Yeah, fuck you. And then the next one is asterisk, pointing to the crowd while I'm in my tight ass leather pants and I'm like making the like O face. And it says, lend me the power of the Dragon Tower. And that's it. Those are the only notes I have for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Flight of the Hatchling is actually really cool. And it is really extreme. It's like just like OC going, fuck you guys. I'm an awesome guitar player. And
it is.
It's like... It's so Keep of Kolesin in its tonality, while also kind of having the, you know, Flight of the Bumblebee vibe. It's
I liked that.
It does so many things at the same time, which is really cool. And, you know...
And it's like the perfect song for an EP, too.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, for an EP, you just... You don't want to, like, have, like, this whole interlinked whatever. You just, like, have this, like, one-off, fast, fun thing. And, yep. So... You know, for my album, Entropy, the sound established in this EP and Epistemology was a huge influence. Like, there are a lot of sections where I'm, like, directly throwing back to it. So, you know, I'm a big fanboy. And if you like my stuff, go listen to Epistemology, because that's a huge fucking influence on my album. And anyway, now we get Epistemology. Fun fact about Epistemology, the artwork is actually done by the fans. So... They did a contest among fans to do, like, who would be, you know... They said, you know, we will, you know, send it out to do the artwork. What the fuck am I saying? I can't put together a fucking sentence. They said, fans, do art and we'll pick the best one and make it the artwork for Epistemology and we'll pay you. And this was the winner. I think the other winners, like the runner-ups, they actually made t-shirts from. But I think my favorite was actually like the runner-up. Let me see if I can find the contest arts. There were like a bunch of really cool runner-ups. But the, you know, I think the winner was my second choice. Let me see if I can find the runner-ups. Fuck. I can't find them. There's like a video with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard to find. I wanted to buy the shirt, but they ran out before they could. But I have a shirt with Epistemology's artwork. Anyway, let's talk about the actual album. And okay. Heaven of Sin is, I think, was also the art for Heaven of Sin was one of the contest winners. Anyway, this album is so powerful. They just go all in on the synths. And you would think that maybe they're going to slow down, but immediately with like spiritual relief, nope, they're just going to like just keep blasting. And, you know, Dark Divinity, Universal Core, still like very fast. And this song, this album is like, I feel like this album isn't as, I always go back and forth between this and Reptilian in some ways. I think Reptilian is better. Even though this album is more epic, I feel like Reptilian mm-hmm. has a little bit more uniqueness and like holistic songwriting to it. Whereas this album, you can like pick and choose songs and listen to them on their own and they just stand out. But also like I think we did lose a little bit with OC going to vocals because some of the more kind of complex riffing where the time signature is like kind of weird. And like there's a bunch of riffs in Reptilian where like the guitars are just kind of playing in a different time signature than the vocals, or like there's like, you know, thing, right? You know that song, and then they kind of just play with that theme,
mm-hmm.
and that like that type of stuff is, you know, they don't do that type of weird stuff, and like they don't do the super technical stuff that they did before. But I don't know if that's air quotes maturing versus just, you know, OC needs to do vocals as well. But overall, I think, you know, this mm-hmm. album is like still really powerful. The synth sound is just so open and kind of all encompassing. And there's still like fucking amazing riffs in here. And this, you know, I love this album. Again, this is a top 10 album for me. It's just that, you know, Reptilian is just so much more special, whereas this one's just like a really good album. I think this is better than Colossus. Close to or equivalent to Armada, but not as good as Reptilian, in my opinion. What do you think?
I like the, I mean, I already am I'm a big synth head. The patrons will know I'm a synth head. You know, I talk about the synths. Yep. I like them. So this one for me is very enjoyable. I do like they've always been good at like establishing an atmosphere for whatever album they're starting. I mean, they pretty much have it locked from track one and you know what you're getting throughout the rest of the thing. So I would say this, yep. I mean, just super accurate representation of the sound for the album, and it sounds so cool.
There's a little bit of light. I thought you were finished. It's so much more melodic, and there's a lot more like clean singing and like powerful chant along, like yeah, type of moments. It's just like it's got a really positive energy.
Yeah, when I was listening to Introspection for the first time. I noticed that like the melody and like the chorus seemed a lot more pronounced, or it seemed like a lot. I don't know. It seemed like it was more the like centerpiece of what was going on at the time. And I think that the way it's emphasizing those different melodic elements, like you're saying, he normally like will do the same parts of like a chord or something, or the like, different parts of a chord, and like staccato riff those to make different melodies.
Yep.
This is like him doing almost like, not like arena rock or anything, but just it's massive. It's massive in a way that feels like you are like chanting and pumping your fist along to it, but it's also extremely heavy.
Yeah, it's their catchiest album for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of times, like whenever bands go for catchy, they tend to like heaviness is the first thing to go by the wayside if you're going for catchy a lot of times.
Yep.
So it's good to see that they just don't compromise in that way.
Yep. I think this album's the 10 out of 10 as well. It's just like less of a 10 out of 10 than Reptilian for me. I love this album. Like I will die for this album. It's fucking amazing. One tidbit. In the grand design, the middle section, like this fast pull off riff that they do for a while, and it keeps building, and then it's like, like they kind of turn that into a groovier chord thing. That song, in my song Omnipotence Paradox, I directly reference that bit. I have the middle section of that song with CJ on the vocals is like mm-hmm. almost exactly that whole midsection of this song. And that, like, Omnipotence Paradox as a whole is like a, the whole song is a Keep of Kolesin reference for me. That I made that song as a, if I were to make a song on epistemology, here's what I would do. And I feel like I did a pretty good job of, like, kind of making that fit in there. And, like, I just, I love this album a lot. And it's, like, a huge, huge influence on me. Because I feel like, even though I like Reptilian more, I think for songwriting, there's more for me to pick up on this album. Because, like, I feel that I can't make another Reptilian. But I feel that I can make something that is like epistemology, which is why I kind of tried. And I learned a lot from listening to this album. And I, you know, it's the biggest influence that this band has had on me. And you know, I still carry that, you know, on the new album. There might be some bits like that as well. But like, I wanted to give a direct homage to that song specifically, because I always, the Grand Design just takes me on a journey. Like, this, every song on this album just takes you on a journey, and it's just like, it's just such a fun time. Like, there's no downer moments. It's just always upbeat. Always, you're just like taking in something, and having a good time. And I wish I could have seen them perform material from this one live as well. But
what are you gonna do?
I don't know. whenever they end up playing live again, I'll go watch them. That's what I'll do.
Oh, okay, fine. That's what you'll do. I think that another thing about, I have like two notes that I actually like want to read specifically for Epistemology, which is right. The guitar solo in the song Epistemology. It feels like a moment of like extreme human vulnerability in like the midst of like super mechanical precision, but even like the vulnerability is like conducted like near perfectly, but it lets like just slipping a little bit, the mass slips at the end. It's so fucking good though.
Yep. I feel like with OC being the vocalist for the band now, he has mm-hmm. much more owned the band being his thing, and it comes through much more in this album as like a personal expression, more so than the other albums. Like, you know, the other album he's singing about like war and dragons and shit, and in this one it's much more kind of introspective and epistemological, huh? Where he's like he's putting more of himself into the music than just his technical prowess.
Yes, and you can hear that. And the last note that I have for the whole album, I didn't even write how I felt about it. I just wrote, "Oh, wahayayo."
Yeah, it's a fucking, I would say that if you're listening to Keep for the first time, this is the album you should listen to. This is the most approachable album. It's the most kind of, you know, there's the most that you can connect within here. Because, like, I think the Armada is just too aggressive for most people. And like you wouldn't, it's not easy to get per se what they're going for without kind of seeing where that sound leads. And I think Reptilian is just like too idiosyncratic. Like, it's just like its own thing. And like, I feel like, again, you need a little bit more context to be able to appreciate it. So I think, Epistemology is like a great starting place. It's a very modern album. It's a very powerful album. It's a very personal album. It's a really technical album. And like, you don't get all of those at the same time most of the time. So I think it's a great place to start.
I agree. I think, I mean, and also, I mean, I think a lot of times it is just natural for people to start on like most recent full-length output or whatever by someone, or even like, you know, an EP or something. So to start on this would be, you'd be doing yourself some a good favor, I think.
Another couple of fun facts about this album. It has two bonus tracks. One of them is Anima Mundi, which is just like hilariously fast. It's after Epistemology and just like starts with a, and then just goes into blast beats. Anima Mundi actually has Attila on vocals again. So they got him back for this one, and it's like just fucking ridiculous Armada style. Just like, there's little synths on this song. It's just extremely fast. And, you know, it feels like a song off of Armada. with Attila on vocals, and that's just fucking awesome. So it's a great bonus track.
So wait, what bonus track is that?
Anima Mundi. Have you not heard that one?
I'm sorry, it keeps cutting out whenever you're saying the track name, so I just get the end of it, and then he's saying, have you not heard that one?
Anima Mundi. The fucking ninth track.
No. I did not. No, I don't think so. I think on Holy the version shit. I have, it just ends at...
You have to listen to these tracks, yeah, dude.
Okay, I will listen to them. Yeah, my version ends on Epistemology.
Holy shit, you're missing out. Okay, these two bonus tracks. Anima Mundi is an Armada-style track. It's straight off of Armada and has Mayhem Attila on vocals. Mm-hmm. You gotta listen to that shit.
Okay. I will be listening to that. And I'm sorry that I didn't. I normally try and do research to get make sure I'm listening to all these tracks.
No worries. And then we got Novae Eruptus, which is another song that is blending epistemology style with Armada style. It's, again, really fast, really thrashy, but has the melodies from epistemology, and it's just a minute and 50 long. It's ridiculous, but you gotta listen to Anima Mundi. It's really fucking awesome.
I will. And are these possibly, like, I mean, is this on the Apple Music version too?
Let me double check. I have it, but I have ripped from the CD. Let me double check the...
Yeah, I was about to say.
Let me find where you can... I mean, you can find them on YouTube, worst case, but...
yeah. Just end up getting the album on Bandcamp or whatever.
Yeah, the Apple Music version does not have those tracks. You're right. But you do have the Alexander Rybak version.
I will check them out.
Okay. You do have the Alexander Rybak version of Divine Land, though, as a single out there. Anyway, these two songs...
Yes, it is good.
These two songs, you gotta listen to them. Anyway.
Okay.
Then we have Heaven of Sin. So Heaven of Sin was... they have a, like, fan club thing where you can subscribe to. That's where they originally released this. So it was like you couldn't buy it. You had to, like, be a part of their fan thing. But then eventually they ended up releasing it. And this is mainly B-sides of epistemology. The one thing is, though, Descendant is a throwback to Ascendant. At the end of Colossus. So, like, it's kind of a thing where they were trying to do, you know... I feel like with the bonus tracks, with Anima Mundi, Novae Eruptus, and Descendant, they were basically throwing back to their older sound. You have the Armada-style songs, you have the Colossus-style songs. So I feel like they were just trying to kind of, you know, do those throwback things. And it makes sense that they kept them off of epistemology, because epistemology has its own thing. And these being, like, bonus tracks is makes sense. And they're really cool bonus tracks. And I think overall Heaven of Sin is a really neat EP as well. And, yeah. But I feel like the real jewels are Anima Mundi and Novae Eruptus. You gotta check those out.
Yeah. And, I mean, I would say that Heaven of Sin, you know, by the end of the song, I know I already said I have my lighter out at one point during Dragon Tower, but I got my lighter out again, and I'm saying I'm missing you. Or I miss you, sorry. Not I'm missing you.
Yep.
I miss you. And just as a 14-minute EP, it captures pretty much any mood you could want from them. It's got a lot of it.
Yep. And then, you know, the drummer quit the band. And they got a drummer eventually. There's a YouTuber called Vanya Gröger, and his name is Necton. He's a ridiculous drummer. He's played with, he hasn't been in, like, a big band, but he has, like, these YouTube videos of, like, him just playing insanely fast. And he's in Keep of Klesen now. He's, like, their full-time drummer. And they've been recording some material. Arndt has posted some stuff on Facebook, and it sounds like they're kind of going in the epistemology direction again. Arndt is Obsidian Claw's real name, by the way, sorry. But yeah, so it's they've been teasing, like, there has been material. I mean, obviously the pandemic has slowed things down, right? But Nekton mm-hmm. has posted like almost a whole song of just drums. And Arndt has posted like him doing vocals for some stuff. So I feel that they are going to get there eventually, but it's going to take some time. They're financially, like, they don't really. I know that, you know, Arndt is like an entrepreneur, or so self-called. He does all these like things that are like, just, you know, those like business ideas, kickstart your business. He's that type of guy. And like, I believe he's gotten involved in like a company that is not exactly multi-level marketing, but kind of. There's this clip from the Canadian version of Shark Tank, Dragon's Den. You know the lioness thing?
I know, I don't know the lioness thing, but I was going to intro myself on this show by saying, like Kevin O'Leary before he went on to Shark Tank, I have been in the Dragon's Den. That's how I was going to intro myself on this episode. So that's very funny that you bring that
up. So there's this famous clip from Dragon's Den where this guy tries to pitches for legal reasons. I'm going to say multi-level marketing, but I don't actually mean multi-level. This is me. Not there. Legal reasons, we're going to jokingly say multi-level marketing, but it's, you know, we don't actually think it's multi-level marketing. We're just being sarcastic. So throughout the rest of this episode, whenever we call Lioness a multi-level marketing scheme, that is just satire. Please do not take that seriously. So this guy goes on Dragon's Den and pitches a multi-level marketing scheme, and he gets laughed out of the room, and he just like sweats balls. So that company is called Lioness. And Arndt is actually also, you know, like a entrepreneur for Lioness as well. So I think he's, you know, gotten roped into that stuff. And he, you know, he tries to like kickstart business ideas. Like he did a cashback credit card for Keep of Kalesin, which was actually like a Lioness card. So he basically tried to he tried to start a fan club for the band that was actually signing people up to be part of MLM. Again, satirical. But it was like not an actual MLM, because like you're not actually. So the thing with this Lioness thing is like it's like a shitty MLM where like people don't actually pay in. It's more like a kind of you get like a cashback card, and they take a proportion of the cashback, and they give you a portion of the cashback. So that's how they kind of make their money. And he did like a Keep of Kalesin fan club thing with this, and I actually signed up for that. So I know a lot about it, and that's how I got the Heaven of Sin EP and some other memorabilia. It never really took off the ground, but. That's, you know, that's the, you know, he's the kind of entrepreneur thingy that I never got my car, by the way, unfortunately. But
oh man, that sucks. I was gonna ask if you had it.
No, I wanted it, but I never got it. I think, you know, the thing with Arndt is that none of his I just sent him a picture of the
car. Oh my god.
And you would like get an extra discount with this card if you bought like Keep of Kalesin merch. The problem is like Arndt always tries to get these business ideas off the ground, and he like never succeeds, unfortunately. They have a Patreon with like two patrons. He tried to do NFTs, he tried to do the cashback card. It's kind of a shame in that, like, you know, if he was able to get like more funding going, you know, the band would be in a much more prominent spot. So clearly, like, it's the main reason why things are so slow with the band, because things never kind of get off the ground. The band never like hits their stride, unfortunately, because they're an awesome band. I've seen them live. They did, I think, one American tour with Nile and Psychroptic and XDO, and that was a fucking amazing show. I think I mentioned this in our Nile deep dive as well.
That sounds like a good show. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Is that when you talked to Carl?
Yes, that's when I talked to Carl. Exactly.
Okay.
The set list was, let me pull it up. It's going to be a little bit difficult to find, but, it was the only set, like, the only tour they did in USA, so I can find it relatively easily. It was in 2010, so I need to go back a little bit. It was right after Reptilian came out, so that's, you know, that's sweet. I believe they played, I'm just going through setlist.fm, just give me a minute. They played a bunch of songs from, obviously, Reptilian, and also some from Armada. Almost there. I'm getting really close. It's not Rock Hard Festival, but it did make me rock hard. Give me one second. There we go. right. Colossus, The Awakening, Judgment, The Dragon Tower, Ascendant. I believe that was the set list. And Dragon Iconography. So it was a fucking baller set.
Wait, so can you read that again for me? It cut out again.
Yeah, the, one second. Let me try to find the exact show that I went to. The exact show that I went to doesn't have the set list, but Dragon Iconography, Colossus, Awakening, Judgment, Dragon Tower, Ascendant. So, like, the bangers from Fuck. Reptilian, Colossus, and Ascendant. The Dragon Tower was so fun live. It was just as awesome as you may imagine. Yeah.
It is, I mean, that sounds like a... I mean, not just for... I mean, that's a killer set for that for them and that material at the time, too.
Yeah. And, like, you know, with Nile and Psycroptic, it was a sick show.
Has... and this is kind of random. Has... Obsidian gone for like a Patreon yet?
Yes, he has two patrons, unfortunately. I mean, the perks are kind of whatever. That's the problem, I think.
The perks aren't that great.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It's a shame.
I just didn't know if he had gone that route.
Yeah. He's gone every route, really. Like, if there's a funding thing, he's tried it.
Was one of the albums kickstarted?
No, he tried to do a Kickstarter for... So let me pull it up, because he was... So there's the Keep of Kalesin fan group. As part of having, you know, acquired but not received that cashback card, I am a member of a private Keep of Kalesin Facebook group with 481 members that aren't posts updates in. And there is where I've heard the, like, drum tracks and the, like, you know, vocal tracks from the snippets of the material in the studio. The Keep floated this idea, and let me find the thing. He floated this idea of doing this big, ambitious thing with crowdfunding that would involve Frost and Attila and Thebon. And they would redo a bunch of the songs with the different vocalists, and they would do this whole like massive fan package thing. And he said, you know, would anybody be interested in kickstarting this? But it never happened. So it was like new EP, anthology album with 20 re-recorded songs, new full-length album, anthology show with the other members, including Alexander Rybak.
Wow.
And the old drummer, Attila Thebon. Yeah. Never really happened, unfortunately. Maybe after COVID is over.
It sounds like it's... Yeah, maybe.
But
I assume because if he... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to assume, as like someone who seems like he has like kind of... you know, entrepreneur, not chronic inventor's disease, but, you know, big entrepreneur head. He probably had interacted with Kickstarter or some sort of kickstarting website in the past.
So the EP, what they've recorded so far is a new Keep of Kalesin single in the new style. I think I've heard that one, like the snippets of it. A heavy song written by Arndt that doesn't really match any album style, just a heavy song. Sounds cool. I'm sure it will be Armada-like. An old song from 1999 that was never properly recorded, which is really interesting. A cover.
Yeah.
And an instrumental. It's 30 minutes of material. So it'll be interesting to see.
And yeah, I mean, I would... Go ahead.
He also posted a synthwave project called Dronia, a teaser for it in January. But who knows?
That's kind of cool.
Let me send a link to that. You were going to say something?
Yeah, I didn't even know that. That's very interesting. I wouldn't have expected that to come from him. But I guess now, I mean, with the synthesizers and everything on epistemology, I probably should have assumed that he was heading in some sort of direction like this, maybe.
So there's one more interesting Keep of Kolesin-related thing. There is this other band named Khonsu, K-H-O-N-S-U. And this is a avant-garde industrial metal black metal band. Really weird sci-fi black metal. And this band is the solo project of Arndt's brother. So this it's Stefan Grönbeck. And Arndt has guested on some of the songs, I believe. And they have released an album called The Zune Protectorate in 2016. That is really something. It's like Keep of Kolesin, but if it was like very industrial and very weird. I don't know how to describe it, but if you're interested in the Keep sound, but just like a different take on it, go check out that album because it is bizarre. It has similar production to Epistemology, but just like very weird. So if you're into the deep Keep of Kolesin lore, you gotta check out Khonsu. I don't like it as much as Keep, but it's really original.
The album art looks incredible. I think I've seen this album art before. Like it reminds me of like a sci-fi art that I've seen before.
Yeah, it is. I think it's maybe done by like it's a really high quality artwork. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was done by like somebody who's does this type of thing. I'll look it up. But
yeah.
So that's the deep Keep of Kolesin lore for you. It's done by a dude named Adrian Bousson, who is apparently works for Season of Mist. And he's done Septic Flesh. He's done a bunch of big artists. So that makes sense. Artspire. He's done the art for Relentless Mutation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I have that on a freaking shirt. So I like that. That's fine.
Yep. So overall, Keep of Kolesin, I think they're an extremely talented and creative band that are highly underrated. And I recommend that you at least give Epistemology a shot. I think that album is really easy to appreciate. And then from there, if you want to go kind of proggier, go to Reptilian. If you want to go heavier, go to Armada. And if you just want more of that, just go to Colossus, I think, and skip the old albums.
I was waiting for the skip the old albums.
I mean, they're fine, but yeah.
I mean, I don't think they stand up to today's standards either, so.
I think they're, they would be like, the old albums are like the type of album that would be somebody's favorite album, but not, like, they're nowhere near to the level of ridiculousness of what the band ends up being in terms of quality.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, it's just not what they come to the band for.
Yeah, because like with Armada, Reptilian, or Epistemology, or even Colossus, a band with such a distinct sound that does so many interesting things within that sound. And, they're fast, they're progressive, they have big synths, they have clean singing, they have a very unique guitar style. It's just like, such a impressive band that is just like, for the previous stuff is just, black metal.
Yeah, they definitely get more technically impressive and gain more personality. I mean, even within like three albums in, they have a lot more personality going for them than they do in the first two.
Yeah, so I think overall, you know, I hope that Art is able to like keep making music because, you know, he is one of my favorite musicians. As a guitar player, I look up to his style a lot. And I love Keep of Kalesin, as you can tell. I love Reptilian, I love Epistemology, I love Armada. So, like, fucking, I don't know. If I could just, like, send him money to just keep working on it, I would. I feel like I'm going to have him hit me up with an email now with a business idea. But anyway. Yeah.
I just imagined you have Obsidian Claw, like, living with you. And he's, like, doing art with you. And that'll he's like, sweet. Yeah, I'm like, just, I'm your living. Yeah, that like, the, he takes the Patreon thing really seriously. Like, you are his, like, patron. yeah. I also, I'm sorry if I cut you off, but, like, the audio kind of is like, still lagging a bit.
All right, let me hear your final thoughts, and then we can call it a day.
Okay. My final thoughts are, I'm glad I got to listen to this band because the music is great. I feel like a lot of people might like just end up not hearing Keep of Kalesin. I mean, and I understand why. I mean, you can't hear everything, but I'm glad that I didn't have to miss out on this. I'm glad I was able to listen to it and also talk with someone who has such deep knowledge about it and also enjoys the material so much. I think that's what, I mean, I keep on saying it, but that's what makes these so special to me.
Thank you.
but as far as, I mean, the discography goes, it's so fucking solid. And yes, the first two albums, you don't really have to listen to them. If you are just trying to be the Keep of Kalesin head that you are hoping you want to be or can be, then yeah, listen to those first two. But after that, it's all pretty much variations of a banger that you're going to enjoy for different reasons.
Yep. And
Dragon Tower, super catchy song.
Yeah, the Dragon Tower. So, you know, if you're going to listen to one Keep of Kalesin song and you're not like a metal elitist, go listen to fucking Dragon Tower. And if you're a metal elitist, listen to Crown of Kings. That's it. Dragon Tower is fucking amazing, dude.
Yes. And there's I will be listening to those bonus tracks. And I will. This is the apology to the listeners. I'm sorry that I did not listen to those bonus tracks. I try to come through for y'all. I try to make sure I'm doing the best work I can. But I really am sorry on that one. I messed up.
No, you don't need to feel bad, dude. It's a underground band, and these are like niche bonus tracks. So you're good. All right. So just, you know, clean up order of business. We have previously on the menu, we had Dimmu Borgir. I feel like after Keep, let's not put Dimmu on the map for next one because they're kind of in the same vein. And similarly with Blind Guardian as well. But maybe we can keep Blind Guardian. I don't know. But anyway, we had In Flames. We were holding off on Machine Head until they put out new material, but they did. So let's put them on the menu. I think Machine Head would be really fun.
Yep.
With Leprous, let's wait for the new album. But I think that was a good idea that you had to put them on the map.
Yep.
I guess we can put Blind Guardian on there because they're different enough. I just want to have like four options. Do you have anything else? So Machine Head, Blind Guardian, In Flames.
The only other one I have would be one that we're waiting for an album from. I mean, we know the album's coming out, but it's not going to be for another like month or something.
Yeah,
I was gonna say Between the Buried and Me, but I don't want to put it on the thing.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Fucking, I have thoughts about that one. I'll dump my thoughts on the regular episode with Eden because that'll be interesting. But, Arch Enemy, how about that?
Okay, sounds good to me.
All right, two Melodeath, one Power Metal, and one fucking Goat. I like Machine Head. The listeners,
thank you, Machine Head.
Can't see, but I have a giant poster of the Blackening hanging on my wall, and I was showing that to Ryan.
and I love it. I'm here for it. I'm supporting it. If you have a blackening flag on your wall, send it to me at ryancastrati@gmail.com. I will answer your email, and I will like it.
Oh, you know what? Fuck, I just realized.
What?
We need to do maximum cavaleration at some point. I did this blog post on the blog where I listened to 30 years of Max Cavalera albums, every single one, and rated every mm-hmm. one of them. I feel like doing that would be insane. It will just die. But what we can do is we can do it band by project by project, and then like go through each of the projects, and then I think what would make sense is like do like a Sepultura one. Do a Soulfly one, and then do a like, you know, other stuff one that includes like Cavalera Conspiracy and Killer Be Killed and Nail Bomb. I think that makes sense. So to start that off, I think instead of Arch Enemy, this is more interesting. So which uh-huh. Max project do you want to start off with, for Sepultura or Soulfly?
I think we should probably start off with Sepultura.
All right, let's put that on the map. Then Sepultura, Machine Head, Blind Guardian, In Flames. That's a cool list.
Yes.
All right.
It'll be fun, too.
Yeah, for the listeners who don't, I'm also a huge Max Cavalera fanboy, so that'll be fun.
And I can become a fan of just about anything if you give me enough time.
All righty. Then that's it. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Ryan, again, for doing this. Go listen to fucking Keep of Kalesin. If we haven't already sold you on them, just fucking go listen to this band. Listen. Really listen.
Yes.
Buy their albums. Give Arndt money so I can make another one. Literally, the band is small enough that listeners of this podcast buying their albums can actually make a difference. Go do it. Buy their merch. They have really cool merch. Let me find how to Keep of Kalesin merch. I'm going to Google how to find it, and then fucking you'll go and do it as well. If you go to keepofkalesin.com, they have a shop. shop.keepofkalesin.com. I'm giving you the exact URL. There you go. You can find all of the t-shirts that made the competition. You can find Armada. You can find Through Times of War. You can find a bunch of like cheesy band photo t-shirts. And, oh, I need to show you this. They have a mask. You can buy a Keep of Kalesin mask for your pandemic needs, and I did buy that, and I will show you that mask. I have a mask of Reptilian on right now. It looks so fucking hilarious because it's just like dragon eyes on my mouth
and the little bit of text on like the chin.
Yes, it's so corny. I love it. Every time I wear it in public, people give me
but it is cool. That is very cool.
Yes. And also, Keep of Kalesin shirts are nice. I like, they're not incredible, but they're not trash. I like them. I like the text. I like the like texture of them. And they have like a ton of merch. Like they have every single artwork in every possible design. As a t-shirt, as a tank top, as a hoodie, as a sweatshirt, as a different cut of t-shirt. Like there's a shit ton of merch on the website.
Well, I'm making the cock pledge. For when I have a job again to get some merch.
All right. That now I'm done. And they even have a beach towel with Armada on it. This looks so fucking terrible. I love this. I want this. It looks so bad, dude. Let me show you that. Oh my god.
Beach towels never turn out well. If there's a beach... Oh my god!
It looks so terrible. I want this.
That's like something that if you brought that to the beach, you'd get way too many questions.
You get way too much pussy, bro. Nah, that's misogynistic. No. You get way too much sexual attention of the kind that you are interested in or not interested in too. Just, you know, people are going to
You could get there's a lot of hole or not hole out there that could be interested or not interested in this very interesting towel.
If you buy this towel and you don't get laid on this towel, I'm not going to give you your money back. But, you know, it will be really funny.
Yeah, it would be.
I'm going to buy this towel. All right.
All right. That sounds good.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Wrap around. Just a sign of